Revelation chapter 21. All right, as we dig into this chapter, this is a great chapter. You'll enjoy this one. As we look at our little chart here, we've finished all of that. The tribulation's over, the millennium's over, and the great white throne is over. And now we're in the last section here of the new heaven and the new earth in Revelation 21 and 22. All right, and so verse number 1. Eternity will be in a new creation. All right, so verse number 1. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. All right, there's lots here to think about. The present earth and atmospheric heaven will be gone. All right, now exactly what all that includes, whether that includes the stars, nobody really knows. It may. All right, so it's at least the atmosphere around the earth and the earth. And that will be gone, and we'll look at that verse in just a moment. But here's a quotation from John Walvoord. He says, in the opening statements of the chapter, John confirms for us the reality of the destruction of the earth and the atmospheric heavens. And 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 10 and 11, and then Revelation 20, verse 11. And we'll look at those verses in a moment. This destruction will be powerful and complete. It will evidently take place right after the final battle, Revelation 20, verse 9. This new heaven and new and earth are not the old heaven and old earth renovated, but an act of new creation. All right, so let's take a look at 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 10. All right, this is the key verse in understanding what's happening there in the end of the destruction of the old earth. Revelation chapter, or sorry, 2 Peter chapter 3, and verse number 10. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise. The elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth also and the works thereof shall be burned up. So God's going to melt down the entire universe and start over. And the parallel to that we saw last week in chapter 20 of Revelation in verse number 9 and 11. Verse number 9 speaks of the judgment, the last judgment. He says, and they went up to the breadth of, on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about, and the beloved city, and fire came down from heaven, from God out of heaven and devoured them. And then verse 11, and I saw a great white throne and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. So here's the verse that we believe describes what we just talked about here, that the earth and heaven fled away. There was found no place for them. They were gone. And so now God's creating a new one, new heaven and new earth. All right? And God will create entirely new heaven and earth with no sea. Now, exactly what that means, nobody really knows. But I guess it means with no sea, with no ocean. Why? Does that mean there's not going to be any water on the universe? I doubt that. I mean, water's pretty. But why didn't God create it like he did now? I don't know. But he says there's going to be no sea. So whether that literally means there'll be no lakes or oceans or any of that, or whether just the oceans will be not there, or whether it's mostly land, I'm not sure. Jared?
Maybe because, I'm just guessing, maybe God thought he doesn't want an ocean because it's kind of like a reminder of the flood. Like the fact that there's so much water again.
Yeah, maybe.
So to speak, like why?
Maybe, but there's some pretty big lakes. I mean, the lakes around my home state and in the U.S., I mean, you can't see across them. They don't look any different than the ocean. You go to the lake shore, you couldn't tell the difference between that and the ocean. I mean, it just looks like the ocean. Waves come in just like at the ocean. Maybe not quite as violently, you know, but I mean, when the storms come up, they're just as violent as the ocean. So, yeah, so how big of a lake are they going to lay? No lakes at all? Well, I don't know. There's a lot of things here we don't know. God didn't tell us. All he told us is that there's not going to be a sea. All right? And the new earth will be our eternal home with God. And let me just pause there for a moment, just ponder on that for a second. So this is where we're going to spend eternity. We often talk about spending eternity with God in heaven. All right, and that's true, but at the same time, the new heaven and new earth are going to be that heaven. And he's going to be bringing down the beloved city from where he is to this new earth that he's going to create. That's going to be our eternal home. All right? So we're not going to be sitting someplace, you know, floating on clouds playing harps, you know. But we're going to be on this new heaven and new earth, and it's going to be a very beautiful place because God's preparing it for us. Now, in eternity, we will have also a new city. All right, we see in verse number 2, he says, "And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband." All right, very interesting description he gives us here. All right, so John calls this place the holy city, the New Jerusalem, and it's going to come down from God out of heaven. So God's up in his heaven place where he is now. He's going to bring this down. How far down? We don't know. Maybe just a little tiny ways. Maybe we're all going to be up there where God is. You know, there's a lot of things we are not told. It will be a beautiful place beyond our comprehension. We can't compare it to anything. Will this be heaven? Good question. Believers will be with God in this new earth and the holy city. Evidently, this will be our eternal heaven. All right, so God's saints look for a better and heavenly country. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 16, remember it says they were looking for a better country, a heavenly one. And then Jesus went to prepare a place in his Father's house, John chapter 14. So Jesus was preparing a place. That's what he said. And he said, "I'm going to come back and get you and take you there." And then the Christian citizenship is in heaven. Philippians chapter 3, verse 20. And God has reserved believers an inheritance in heaven. 1 Peter 1, 3 to 5. He said, our inheritance is there in heaven. So, as we think about all these things, God does talk about heaven, and he does tell us we're going to spend eternity there with him in heaven. But what's this new heaven and earth got to do with it? And, you know, as we put it all together, heaven is where God is. All right? So, just because we're going to be on this new heaven and new earth that's in a new creation of his, God will be there. And where God is, there is heaven. And where God isn't, that is hell. And we don't want to be there. We don't want to be separated from God. So there's much that we don't understand, but there's the part we do understand is exciting. All right? There's also going to be a new intimacy. Look at verse number 3. "And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men." All right, now let's just pause on that one for a moment. The word tabernacle has the idea of he is tabernacling with us. He is tenting with us. He is abiding with us. And he says the tabernacle of God is with men. God is living now with men. All right, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. All right, now, when God created everything in the beginning, he walked and talked with Adam and Eve. He fellowshiped with them in the garden. And now for all eternity, God is going to make it so that we will fellowship with him. We'll be able to walk and talk with God. God will be right there with us. And yet at the same time, God does not have a body, but we're going to be immortal. There's a lot of things here that we don't fully grasp. Jesus Christ has a body, an immortal body. So maybe we'll be seeing him, but we'll be able to see God. We couldn't see God now because of our sinfulness, but then we won't have that sinful nature, so we'll be able to see God without dying. A lot of interesting things here. And at this point, God will begin dwelling with the immortal people, and he will be with them and be their God, and he will utterly wipe away all the present things that trouble us. And God will wipe away every tear and from every eye. Look at verse number 4. "And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. And there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying. Neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away." So the troubles we have in this life are going to be gone forever. And we'll be able to spend an eternity with God without any of that present. And he's going to make all things new. Verse number 5, "And he said, he that sat upon the throne said, Behold, I will make all things new. And he said unto me, Write, for these words are true and faithful. Now, what does he mean by making all things new? I'm not really sure. I mean, yeah, what is the all things? Well, whatever we have, this new heaven and new earth, all that's going to be brand new. It's not something he's fixing up. This old earth needs to be melted down, not fixed up. But Christ is going to make all things new. And there's going to be a new contrast with the former things that trouble us, that perhaps new feelings, new emotions, new joys, new memories. Who knows? You know, all those things. And maybe, you know, even as hard as it is for us to grasp, maybe all the things that burden us down right now, the memories of problems and issues and painful things we've gone through, all this can be gone. We'll have all things new. He'll give us a new mind, a new ability just to enjoy Him, enjoy all that there is there for all eternity. And so there's, you know, you can really meditate on this and imagine a lot of things. We can't be super dogmatic about some of our imaginations because God doesn't tell us, but we can enjoy just imagining what it might be like, though we cannot be positive and say this is exactly what it's going to be. Any other ideas? What else do you think might be there when he says all things new? Any thoughts on that? All things. All things. Yeah.
All things,
yeah.
Old thinking means all things.
Yes, yep. So, yeah, there is, it's you know, everything that we can comprehend, all the things that God has for us in heaven are going to be brand new, and they'll be exactly what He wants for us. So we can't really compare them to the things we have right now, and God will make all things better than they were ever before. And
when this causes one's mind to be in a place where your body is different in terms of senses, is no more pain, is no more thinking the wrong things, and that would might be sort of put together as evil or incorrect. This is not part of your, I think, just it almost boggles the mind.
Yes.
To try and understand what that must feel like.
And, you know, so when we think about all things new, probably some of the most exciting things that will be new is just the thought that we will be new. That will be awesome and amazing. But, yes, there's much to look forward to. Verses 6 to 8 talk about a new future. All right? So as we look at verse number 6, and he said unto me, it is done. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give unto him that is athirst of the fountain of the water of life freely. Let's just pause there for a moment. God speaks, is God who's speaking here, He is the Alpha and Omega. He's the Eternal One. Remember the Alpha and Omega. Alpha is the first letter of the Greek alphabet and Omega is the last. So He's emphasizing His eternality here. And we will never thirst for anything ever again. Remember in John chapter 4, what was Jesus talking about in John 4 when he said that there would be living water flowing out of us? What was he who was he speaking to? The woman at the well. Remember? And he offered her water that would be everlasting. And so here he's in the eternal state and he tells us here that there will never thirst for anything again. And because we overcame sin by the blood of the Lamb, we will inherit all new things that God has for us. So all these wonderful things God has prepared for us are ours because we've overcome by the blood of the Lamb. Nothing to do with us. Nothing to do with what we have done, but what Christ has done for us. And as a convicting challenge, God reminds us of the destiny of all who do not overcome the blood of the Lamb. That's one of the most sad verses in the Bible, verse number 8. But the fearful and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. All right, now as we just take a look at this here, the description is of their description is sinners of all degrees. All right, so all different kinds of sinners. Beginning with the fearful, those who are afraid to trust Christ, they're cowards. You know, they and you know when we try to witness to people, we find a lot of people like this that are just fearful. They're afraid. I mean, they may not say that outwardly, but they're thinking, you know, if I did what they said and put my faith in Christ and my life changed, nobody would like me anymore. I'd lose all my friends. And I don't want to do that. And they're fearful. God says that's one of the biggest things. That's the number one thing he mentions here that will keep people out of heaven. Is that they're afraid of the counting the cost. They said, I don't want to do that. I don't want to lose my friends. I don't want to lose my position. I don't want to stop doing what I'm doing. I like what I'm doing. I just want to go to heaven because it doesn't work that way. Jared?
I guess we'll see even during the tribulation, there'll be people that be, well, even in today's, like, there's a lot of places where you'd be too afraid to do that because you can literally die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you dare repent Christ.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there are, during tribulation, and there, like you said, there are places today. You know, some of the Muslim countries and some of the communist countries, you proclaim yourself to be a Christian, and you can lose your life for that. You know, we forget that sometimes because we live in a world that, you know, we don't see that. We don't see that in our culture, and we're blessed for that. But we need to remember that. He says, not only the fearful, but also the unbelieving, the faithless, the ones that say, I just can't believe that. I just can't believe that. And so those two categories are the big ones that he starts out with, and then he goes on and talks about the murders and the abominable things that are just sickening to God. And murders and whoremongers and sorcerers, a lot of these sexual sins and the drug addicts and idolatry and then he ends it up with all liars. And their destruction is the eternal lake of fire. That's so sad. Then in verses 9 to 27, the rest of the chapter here, we see the New Jerusalem and how that it's going to be a marvelous place. And an angel invites John to see the bride, the Lamb's wife. Look at verse number 9. This is an interesting verse. And you can tell me what it means when we get done. And there came unto me one of the seven angels which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues. All right, so this is one of those angels that had the vials, the greatest of all the judgments. And he talked with me, saying, come up hither, and I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. All right, now, what's he showing him? He said, I'm going to show you the bride. The Lamb's wife. Who is the Lamb? Christ. All right, so he says, this is Christ's wife I'm going to show you. And verse number 10, and he carried me away in the Spirit to a great and a high mountain and showed me that great city, the Holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God and having the glory of God. And her light was like unto the stone most precious, even like a jasper stone, clear and crystal. As crystal, and had a wall great and high, and had 12 gates, at the gates 12 angels, and the names written thereon, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. All right, now there's a lot in that. There's a lot in that section that you can really ponder. Let me just bring a few of them out to open. Some think that the bride is the New Jerusalem, the city and a woman. Others think the bride is the New Jerusalem, a city for a woman. But as he describes it here, he says, I'm going to show you the bride, and what's he show him? He shows him New Jerusalem. And you think, that doesn't make sense. Christ didn't marry a building. But there's several things to think about. This is just a wild idea that came to my mind as I was going over this. Not saying it's true, you can chew on it. Could it be that this New Jerusalem and all that he describes with the precious stones and the walls and the gates and all the beauty and the street of gold and all that he's going to describe for us is just a magnificent description of his bride? And it's not... Could it be that it's not even a literal city, but it is a he describes it as that because of the beauty of his bride. I don't know. That's just a crazy idea. I've never been taught that. It just came to my mind as I was studying over it. So something for you to think of. The city will shine like precious jasper stones, verse number 11, and having the glory of God and her light and, was like unto the stone most precious, even the jasper stone, clear as crystal. Alright, so she's this very brilliant, and the city has 12 gates, each named after Israel's tribes. Now this one here will blow your mind too. Think about this. If the city is the bride, is Israel part of the bride? If Israel's not part of the bride, then why are the gates named after Israel? And if the city is called the bride, and the gates are all named after Israel, you know, that's not what we normally think. That's not what we're normally taught. We're normally taught that the bride of Christ was the church, and Israel's not part of the bride. They were going to be attending the wedding, but they're not part of the bride. And, you know, that's some of the things we've been taught. But you look at this thing and you think, I don't get it. I don't understand. How can the bride be coming down and the bride is this, pictured as this beautiful, beautiful city, and it's got these 12 gates and they're named after the tribes of Israel? There's a lot of stuff in here for you to chew on, all right? Peter.
Israel is the center of Judaism.
Yes.
And you could say the center of faith in God. Then is the New Jerusalem not the church as represented by Jerusalem?
Well, see, that's what I'm wondering, but then that would mean that Israel's part of that.
Or is it an image of the church? He started off with the Jews in the Old Testament,
yep.
And then incorporated the Gentiles, and faith in Christ became the key to Christianity rather than just following the laws and statutes,
yep,
of the Old Testament. Well, is this not the Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, and this is the completion of the entire process, talking about the bride of Christ, the church, in terms of Jerusalem from where it started?
I guess I'm not fully following your path of thinking, but
he's talking about the bride of Christ being the church.
Yeah.
But he's describing the church as the new Jerusalem, which is the new center of faith in God, as it was for the Jews in Jerusalem.
Okay, I get where you're coming from. I don't know.
The opposite. You know, I saw the bride now being the Jews who had rejected Christ all that time. The church was always the Gentiles, excluding the Jews, generally speaking. But now he's saying to John, come up here and have a look, and referring to the bride. I think that was the interesting part for John, that the bride now was someone who was never there before. And so you now have the bride being the Jews, who were never part of that relationship with Jesus.
Well, I think you'd have, with that theory, I think you'd have a lot of struggles with some of the other passages, because there's other passages that pretty clearly talk about the church being the bride. Especially like in Ephesians chapter 5, he says that he was going to be married to the church. So there's...
But the Jews now became part of the bride, which was a church.
Well, Jews certainly can become part of the bride, part of genuine Christians. Whether they're part of the bride, that's the thing we're just kind of discussing. Because whether the Jews are actually part of the bride or whether they're not part of the bride, it really doesn't make any difference at the end of the day what we come to conclusion on this, because God doesn't tell us crystal clearly. La Peace, what's your theory?
I was just wondering, by this time, part of this chapter in the Bible, then God already took the bride away, you know, so that, because that's after the
yes,
1,000 years.
Yes.
So where is all that people? Is they not already maybe in that Jerusalem is coming down?
Well, all the believers of all time will be there at this time.
Yeah.
All right. So whether they are part of this bride that's coming down or whether they're part of something else, they're all going to be there. All right. So we know that. And it, you know, in my mind, and I could be wrong, but in my mind, I can just envision that all the believers now are part of this New Jerusalem that God is creating. The Jews are in there, the Gentile believers, and we're all part of this, and we are His adored bride. But, you know, there's things like that. And then He talks about this bride coming down from heaven to this new earth. Was He bringing His bride down to the new earth that He gave the, to them? Was it literally the people that are coming down? Or is this really a city that's got all these walls and gates and stones and pearls and all this kind of stuff? There's a lot of things there to think about. But all we can say for sure is we know that it's going to be good, and we know we're going to be there, and we'll be able to enjoy that. And it'll be a blessed and a wonderful time, however this all works out. But there is definitely things there that we just do not fully understand. The three gates here in my notes, as they continue on, the three gates are on each side of the city, four sides. And they have 12 foundations named after the apostles. All right, so there you got the New Testament in there. On the foundations, there's the wall is 42 cubits high. All right, that's 65 meters high, the wall around this city. That alone, it comes causes confusion as you think about it. All right, the wall there, I mean, this 65 meters high, that is really, really high. And there's this wall around the city. So what's the wall for? And why the wall? And then when we see some of the details we're going to look at next, this is really kind of blows you away. The city is 12,000 furlongs long, wide, and high. All right, that's depending on the furlong measurements. I've looked it up on the web, and there's differences of opinion, but a furlong, I'll give you details about that in just a moment. But it comes to about 2,236 kilometers high, the city. And it's wide, the same width, the same. And some people say, well, is it a pyramid? Is it just a cylinder? Some people even envision it as a 12-sided cylinder because of the 12 sides of the gates. There's all kinds of envisioning ideas, but it's wide, tall, and high. Now think about the size of this. If a furlong is 185 meters, which seems to be a pretty average of different people's opinions, times 12,000, all right, so that's those 12,000 furlongs, that comes out to 2,220,000 divided by 1,000, that's in meters, so divided by 1,000 would give us kilometers. So you got 2,220 kilometers to that size. And this New Jerusalem is, then it, when you look at the size of it, the not the cubic meters, just the square meters, comes to 4,928,400. Right now, and when you look at that, all of Western Australia is 2,529,880. All of Australia is 7,692,000 square kilometers. So. Yeah, well, we don't need to worry about oxygen then. But you think about the size of this. I mean, you're talking about something that is much bigger, almost twice as big as WA, and it's that high and that wide, a gigantic cube.
So I think so. With Australia, like example, like we've got 7,692,024 square kilometers, right? But that's on a flat plane. Shouldn't Jerusalem be cubed, not square?
Yeah.
Yes, but that's what I've just said. This is the foundation size.
Oh, not the volume.
No, this is only the square meters. It's not cubic meters, this is square meters.
The volume is even bigger than that.
Of course. Wow. Yeah, this is the square meters of Australia and the square meters of WA, or the square kilometers. So there are over 2.5 million square kilometers in WA. All right, so then you take that and put it that high. It's amazing.
I'm still worried about that high.
Yeah. Well, apparently we'll be able to just float around. I don't know. I mean, how are you going to get up there?
If you take the volume into account, the potential volume, that's even more mind-bending.
Yes.
So if you pictured not West Australia, but the rest of Australia, you've got almost about the kilometre square of New Jerusalem. So if
yes.
you pictured the rest of Australia and then pictured it as high as it was wide, and
yep.
that's kind of what it's
yep.
the dimensions of it.
Yes. Unbelievably huge. And so, and we, you know, we evidently, I mean, to have it that high, evidently, you know, we look at it around here and say, well, you know, we got lots of space up above, we can fly our airplanes. But apparently, all this is usable space. And we're not limited to, we're not limited by the gravity and all those kind of things. You can just spend hours meditating on this chapter and coming up with all kinds of ideas, and we dare not, you know, proclaim them as absolute fact because we don't understand all of that, but we can certainly see a lot of neat things. John Ray.
Well, I just worked it out in my calculator, but it would be about 11.1 billion cubed, if you cubed it in volume.
Of kilometers.
No, well, the volume.
Yeah, cubed kilometers.
Potential, yeah, which is insane.
Yeah, it's huge. All right, so. Yeah, well, that's the thing. This is just the city. So it's coming down to the new earth. And the new earth, I mean, he could make it any old size he wants. Just because our earth is the size it is, that doesn't mean a thing. Because you look at all the other planets he made, and our earth is the little grain of sand compared to a lot of the other planets.
The gravity of the bigger planets crushes like
a... But there's no gravity there. We don't need to worry about it. It's eternity. All right? So God can do whatever he wants. And even if it was a gravity thing, he can make you handle the gravity. But whatever it is, God is in control, and there's some cool things here. Could be a cube, pyramid, 12-sided. Like I said, the building materials of the city are all precious. The walls of jasper, the city is of pure gold. And the foundations were garnished with precious stones. And then the 12 gates are made of one pearl each. The streets were pure gold. The Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are the temple of it. Let's take a look at that one, verse number 22. And I saw that no temple therein, for the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are the temple of it. All right, so as we picture this thing coming down, whatever it is, the Lord is the temple of that place. And we're going to be worshiping him. And so, you know, we think of the temple and we think of the pictures of the temple. You know, you wonder, well, why did God make the temple the way he did with the inner court and the outer court and all the things? But it was a picture of the temple that was supposedly in heaven. But if God's the temple, you know, who knows? All right. The glory of God and the Lamb are the light of the city. Verse number 23, and the city had no need for the sun, neither the moon, to shine in it, for the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. And the gates of the New Jerusalem will be open all the time. Verse number 25, and the gates thereof shall not be shut at all by day, for there shall be no night there. All right, so it's continual daytime. That means we don't have to sleep. Continually awake all the time to spend time with God. Think about the wasted time we sleep. You know, that's always a waste.
So, the way I always thought is we probably wouldn't sleep, but that's not to say we wouldn't rest, because we know, I mean, God didn't slumber on the seventh day, but he also did rest. So, rest isn't contrary to paradise.
Well, he stopped from what he was doing. I don't know. He said, we're going to work.
I'm saying we sleep, but we potentially rest.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Again, all these things are things you can just dream about and think about and come up with some crazy ideas about, but we don't know all the details. God doesn't tell us. There'll be no danger there in our new home. The eternity will be one continuous day, and nothing defiled will ever enter the city. Verse number 27, and there shall in no wise enter into it anything that defiles, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie, but they that are written in the Lamb's book of life. So we will be there, and God will be providing for us, meeting our needs, and all this wonderful stuff will be there for us. And whatever this city is, whether it's the people, or whether it's the city that God's prepared for the people, or whether it belongs to the Jews and the Gentiles and all Christians together, it really doesn't make any difference. It's just a beautiful thing that God has prepared for us, and He gives us a little glimpse of it here, and let us imagine a dream and ponder on this. And so when you lay awake at night, it gives you good something to think about, all right? So give us a good thought. There's lots there to ponder. As we conclude and just look at the personal application here, for all those who are saved by Christ, we have a bright future. We will live on a new and a perfect earth and in a beautiful new city. We will have constant interaction with God Himself. We will have new feelings, new minds, new joys, and total satisfaction. And our dwelling place will be beautiful beyond description. And eternity will be in one never-ending day with no night. Now all sin and temptation will be gone forever. And if you have not yet been truly saved, you can be. You need to trust Christ without delay. All right, great chapter. Much in that thing for you to really, really ponder over. And like I said, you know, there are some people that hold strong opinions about some of this. But the truth of the matter is, I don't know how you can get really strong opinions about it, because it doesn't say all the details. And there's things that seem to confuse. And so just use your imagination and enjoy it, and just look forward to whatever the wonderful things are that God's got prepared for us.